special. You are exactly on time. You are here for half past three, and you came exactly half past three. Thank you very much for the punctuality. We were protected by other members because we thought 2 o'clock we were starting, but we said we're unfair to you. Let's hand over to you, please. B7048.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Honorable
Members. What was the submission?
Sorry, I've got everything up. Good afternoon, Honorable Members. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Zulfa Abram. I work for the Heart and Stroke Foundation, and I generally work as a dietitian. So today, this is what I've got to say. Let me start off by telling you a little bit about our foundation. The Heart and Stroke Foundation is a community-based health organization, and we were established in order to reduce the incidence of heart disease and stroke in the population of South Africa. And we do this primarily by providing education and supporting research. The Heart Foundation supports the Tobacco Products Control Amendment Act, whose purpose is, firstly, to prohibit the sale of tobacco products by means of vending machines, to make the standards that apply to manufacturers of tobacco products applicable, to increase the fine for contravening the Act. Furthermore, we also wholeheartedly support the Bill's prohibition of selling tobacco products to and by persons under the age of 18 years. Since the first Tobacco Products Control Act of 1993, was initiated, many steps towards effective tobacco control policies have taken place. And we find that the impact of the tobacco control policies was quite dramatic. In South Africa, South Africans 15 years and older, the smoking prevalence decreased from 32% in 1993 to 24% in 2003. And amazingly, I was even here in 1993 for the very first time. Smoking and heart disease seems to be a deadly combination. Tobacco use kills half of its users before the age of 60 years if they start smoking at a young age and they continue throughout their adult life. Smoking kills 80 South Africans per day, resulting in more than double the number of deaths occurring on our roads each year. Tobacco users die of various diseases prematurely, but most of them tend to die of cardiovascular disease, which we refer to as stroke and heart attacks, followed by chronic lung diseases. In South Africa, tobacco use accounts for 8% of all the deaths annually, and smokers have a 4 times greater risk of stroke compared with people who have never smoked cigarettes before. It is a fact that any form of tobacco marketing is selling death. 5 million deaths occur annually due to smoking-related diseases, and this is a lot of customers which the tobacco industry needs to replace. The tobacco industry uses various marketing strategies to target this particular group, and a key target group are children, since few smokers start after the age of 18. Since the ban of advertising of tobacco, other avenues of hidden advertising have been used, such as the color code venues and to use one-on-one interaction, which still aim to increase consumption and the brand share. Tobacco is the only legal consumer product that kills the user when used exactly as the manufacturer intended. A complete ban on any form of tobacco promotion is the cornerstone of the tobacco control policy. Where smoking in children are concerned, children inhale more air to their body weight than adults. Therefore, they absorb more tobacco smoke toxins. Smoking by parents is the biggest contributor of children's exposure to secondhand smoke. Children are less able to complain and to remove themselves from these smoke-filled rooms. And children who breathe in secondhand smoke are more likely to get colds, allergies, middle ear infections, glue ear, which is the most common cause of deafness in children. South African adolescents have the highest reported smoking prevalence amongst African health surveys. And among these youths, about the long-term effects of smoking doesn't seem to matter to these people, to these young people, as they see living till 50 sounds like they've had a very, very long life. The marketing of tobacco effectively lures teenagers to start smoking, as this is portrayed as classy and glamorous, and smokers appear to be mature and popular, something which teenagers aspire to be. In conclusion, we'd like to say that smoking is best dealt with through health-promoting interventions, such as legislation banning smoking in public places, as well as through individual smoking cessation programs. Conservatively, it is estimated that such interventions alone could save South Africa 300 million rand per annum. We, the Heart Foundation, the Heart and Stroke Foundation, support the Tobacco Bill's objective of preventing any form of promotion or distribution of tobacco products, as well as the sale of tobacco products to under 18. We are passionate about the health of our nation and our children, and therefore champion the fight in protecting our children from the dangers of smoking. We believe the bill will make a significant contribution to reducing the health, economic, and environmental harms caused by tobacco in South Africa. And we believe that it is the government that has a duty to protect the future of this country from harmful substances such as tobacco. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It was worth waiting for. We shall call for questions. Questions, honourable members. Generally, you support the legislation, the amendment thereof. None. Thank you very much. I think we should close it there. Am I right? We were saying the last point, I think it also comes out of your submission, which we raised in the earlier on, keeps on coming. If tobacco is such a risky issue as you have articulated well here, and then you were saying somewhere in the presentation, the question of education becomes central, but at the same time we are saying the tobacco industry should not contribute for its things in the education and health of the people. We are wrong to say so. To contribute for it to rectify the wrongs it has created. Would that be wrong?
I don't know if I would agree that we'd want to use their money to rectify their wrongs. I think the Heart and Stroke Foundation certainly wouldn't be accepting their money.
After tomorrow, we need to start the photocopy. First, to go through informally all the topics, take into account what has been the submissions after the submission. After the people will come on the 7th. We need your guidance. Next week, we must deal with the bill now. Take into account the other programs we are having in Parliament. Honorable Kalyan, we are going to check the program of Parliament. Not here. But we must deal with the informal processing of the bill next week, Tuesday. When we finish, go to the formal one, check on board, whatever improvements. The Department of Health will be rating the state advisor, so they'll be coming to you on some of the issues where.
We're going to start working on them today, Chair.
By the time we deal with this, maybe tomorrow,
by the end of tomorrow. By the end of the presentation.
So that when we deal with the amendments and the processing, you will help us.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, DJ. So, let's agree. Let's just wait here, Mr. Kalyan, the owner, sorry, Honor Kalyan will help us with that. Let me proceed.
Are you going to say that next week we can deal with the informal process? When will we have a chance to ask the department questions of code? On the informal, they'll be available for afterwards. Yeah, but obviously other issues are very. Well, Chair, my suggestion would be, because I mean, obviously more issues have been raised today from the present, more will be raised tomorrow as well, and we're finishing quite late tomorrow, according to the program at 7 o'clock, so we won't have the chance to engage with the department properly. So I would suggest next week, Tuesday, we do that as well. You know, we start with that process, and then go through, the informal deliberations. I do feel it's important that we have a dialogue with the department of the issue.
Committee, that's a suggestion from the Honorable Michael.
And it might be worth noting that this bill is provisionally set down for the 16th of May, and I say provisional, to be debated in the House.
That's next Friday.
Now, if we're going to have informal deliberations on Tuesday and we're going to discuss it clause by clause ourselves, we're going to run into trouble, Of course, tomorrow at the Chief of Forum, we will have greater clarity on whether this is now provisional or confirmed. But then we run into trouble with translation and suspension of the 3-day rule as well.
I should have thought that they will get two from us when we finalize the bill, and then they kick in their own process.
Honourable Chair, if I may indulge, just to advise the Honourable Committee that if the bill is between the 15th of May and the 24th, there might be a difficulty because of the World Health Assembly, which would mean that the Minister of Health would be in the World Health Assembly in Geneva during that period between the 16th and the 24th. But if it comes to a push, she would have to recuse herself from that very important engagement. But I'm just putting it on the table that there is a World Health Assembly between those dates.
May I come in, Chair? I think that we should, as a committee, in committee, decide that maybe we push it forward after the 16th. It gives us enough time, and I don't think there's an impact on the NCOPs.
Michael, we had this debate last time about the splitting. We split it, avoiding those areas that needed to go to the SOP. But now we attended in the program, the problem, I think you put it that way, where now it's a certain set, we must deal with it because it's advertising, it's point of sale, it's all those things. It must go to the SOP for me. But let's take you from what Honorable Matthew and Kali and the thing. Let's take our faith and see how it's up to go. Let's do it more diligently in our own pace rather than to be forced by issues that can be controlled elsewhere. I think for us is to ensure that we are more thorough in whatever we're doing rather than people to put a date and we work according to date. That isn't taking into account the magnitude of the work we're supposed to be doing. Can we approach it that way? Then the whipper here will then guide the good forum and tell us when are we completing the process. Agreed? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. So I have a guidance. So you'll guide us in terms of the program next week, then? Tomorrow, eh? Thank you very much. So we suspend. I'm told there's coffee outside as long as what is coffee? I was saying this even letter. Where did he go? He left. So let's meet tomorrow with Mass Malt Holding Limited Bakery at 10:20. We'll then meet. Let's go for coffee for now and then take it from there. I think we are adjourning now. Oh, sorry. Honorable Gavita.
Interrupting. But Patricia Lambert is outside and the doors are locked and she can't get in.
Submission from Patricia Lambert. It comes in an inverted way. The chairperson has made the closing remarks. The chairperson has identified the way forward for tomorrow and for next week. Because she did not observe time, we are now starting afresh. Advocate Patricia Lambert, can we hand over to you?
Thank you very much.
We told you we're stuck in a meeting for a very long time. Dr. Sabuji, was very nice.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, ladies and gentlemen. I wasn't anticipating having to say this because the program that I was handed this morning had me speaking at 4:30. And since I am only here for a very short period of time, I had some conflicting meetings. But I have left my other meeting and am now here to present to you. So thank you for this opportunity. The preamble of the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control.
Do you have a copy of the submission?
We don't have copies because it is only on my stick. I traveled by air, so to carry extra paper is not a good thing. But you will have them by tomorrow morning. The preamble of the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control uses the phrase devastating worldwide health, social, and economic and environmental consequences of tobacco consumption and exposure to tobacco smoke. This is a very unusual phrase to find in an international treaty. International treaties are drawn up by dry, boring lawyers like myself. We are not given to flowery language. The fact that That's the word devastating, which is a word of large significance, is used in this convention, is because the drafters of the convention, and I was fortunate enough to represent South Africa on that negotiating body, were that concerned about the health consequences of tobacco use, that we overrode the normal vocabulary for international treaties and inserted the word devastating and worldwide. It was not an accident or a slip of the drafter's pen. The simple fact of the matter is that the epidemic is escalating. In the year 2000, and these are the World Health Organization's figures, a body of which we are a member. In 2000, 1 in 10 deaths was linked to tobacco control. That meant that 4.9 million people die each year from tobacco use. That is 13,400 people each day, or 530 people internationally each hour. There are other causes of death. HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria, all of these things kill people. So why hone in on tobacco? The reason that we hone in on tobacco is because it is an entirely preventable cause of death. If people do not use tobacco products, they do not get ill, they do not die, and they are therefore no longer a burden on the country's health system. Is this something we can afford to ignore? By the year 2030, according to the World Health Organization's 2008 figures, this year's figures, tobacco is expected to be the leading cause of death within the next 20 years. 10 million people a year will die from tobacco use. And in red at the bottom, you will find the most startling statistic of all. It is projected that 70% of those deaths will take place in developing countries, in countries just like ours. I have used in my presentation today quotations from the tobacco industry's own documents. Around the world, tobacco control activists like myself and many others in South Africa are being accused of being emotional, of exaggerating, of using old data, and so on and so forth. So I thought that perhaps the most persuasive thing I could do would be to portray to you, in the industry's own words, how it sees itself behaving. This is a quotation from British American Tobacco from a set of documents released in Britain as a result of a court case. I quote, "We should not be depressed simply because the total free world market appears to be declining. Within the total market, there are areas of strong growth, particularly in Asia and in Africa. It is an exciting prospect." Ladies and gentlemen, I did not make that up. That comes from the depository in England that houses the tobacco industry's documents. To the industry, it is an exciting prospect that they are growing their markets in Africa and Asia. And we all know that the growth in the market for the tobacco industry equals more death and more disease for the people who are unfortunate enough to be duped into using tobacco products. Tobacco is no ordinary product. It is the only legal product that, when used according to the manufacturer's instructions, kills or makes ill more than half of the people who use it. You've heard that before. I have said it to this body, and so have many others. But today, I have chosen to emphasize the word legal. It is perfectly true. This is a legal product. But we cannot for one single minute confuse the word legal with the word good. Those of us who grew up in South Africa over the past 30, 40, 50 years, and here I am giving my age away, will be fully aware that not everything that is written in the statute books that is legal is necessarily good. The product may not be legal, may not be ordinary, but the industry is a very ordinary industry. Like all other industries, the tobacco industry has one duty and one duty only, and that is to make as much profit as it can for its shareholders. If it fails in that duty, the directors and those who govern that industry would be legally responsible because they have fiduciary duties towards their shareholders. Principal among those duties is the duty to make a profit. This is also not new to this body. In 2006, Judge Gladys Kessler of the United States wrote this: I draw your attention to the date, ladies and gentlemen, to refute the argument that those of us who are tobacco control activists use old information. We don't. This is current. This is the latest tobacco control case where the United States government took the tobacco industry to court for misleading advertising. Judge Kessler wrote, this case is about an industry that survives and profits from selling a highly addictive product which causes diseases that lead to a staggering number of deaths per year, an immeasurable amount of human suffering and economic loss, and has a profound effect on our national health care system. If a judge in the United States, which is one of the wealthiest countries in the world, finds that the tobacco use is having a profound effect on the United States' national health system, how much more of an effect is tobacco use having on a health system in a developing context such as our own? The United States does not have a high burden of HIV/AIDS, TB, or malaria. We do. We have to find ways to help people with those diseases. But we also have to find ways to help people with tobacco-related diseases that frequently lead to death, and that places an extraordinary burden on our public health system, a burden that we can ill afford. So we need to find the balance. And that, members of the Portfolio Committee, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, is where you come in. Yes, this product is legal, but it is also lethal. The scientific evidence is incontrovertible, despite everything that the tobacco industry has done to prove otherwise. You, as legislators for our country, have the power to regulate trade. It is found in Section 32 of the Constitution. In addition to having the power to regulate trade, the legislators in South Africa also have an obligation to protect public health. So here you are, in the very tricky process of balancing rights with obligations. And this legislation that is before you at the present time is not there to stop the industry from trading. It is there to ensure that we do everything that we can to protect public health, particularly the public health of people who are not in the fortunate position that many are around the world of having education and having a tobacco control movement that constantly pushes public health issues into the forefront. And that is why support for this particular piece of legislation is so vitally important. Support here and support now. This is the power of advertising. This is the world famous Marlboro Man. There are no people who do not recognize the Marlboro Man, even in the developing world. And I will return to this iconic piece of advertising later in my presentation, because I wish to inform, to illustrate how important advertising is, and therefore how important it is for us to regulate it and to regulate it well. South Africa has ratified the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. And the Framework Convention on Tobacco, that means that we are legally bound by it. It is not a choice that we can exercise. It is a legal obligation. This Parliament ratified and the President signed that ratification. That makes us legally bound. And according to Article 13, it says that we need a comprehensive ban on all tobacco advertising, promotion, and sponsorship. All would include the internet, brand stretching, and all other forms of tobacco advertising, promotion, and sponsorship. South Africa has already gone a very long way towards controlling, but not banning, controlling advertising, promotion, and sponsorship. I would love to go onto the world arena, as I do now, as part of my daily work, and be able to say that this country had the courage to ban tobacco advertising, promotion, and sponsorship totally. But it would simply not be true, because the best that we have been able to do is to control it. And the reason that we have only been able to control it is not the will of the legislature, but the power of the industry to exploit every single loophole that they are able to exploit. Most direct advertising has disappeared from South Africa. We don't have billboards. We don't have advertisements in the newspapers and on the backs of magazines and inside magazines like we always used to. But we are therefore particularly vulnerable to forms of indirect advertising. When there are loopholes in the law, the industry, which is one of the richest industries on earth, if you are ever feeling bad about your bank balance, go in and check the profit statistics of the pharmaceutical industry and the tobacco industry. They are on a par and they will knock your breath away. This industry makes an enormous amount of money, and it does it selling a product that will either make you sick or kill you. There is no good to the product at all. The industry, because it has so much money, employs some of the smartest people on earth to do its business. And I take my hat off to them. They are extraordinarily clever. And that is why we have to be extraordinarily determined. Direct advertising is still found in South Africa. It is gone in the first three incidences. It is still found in point of sale advertising, and I shall return to that shortly. And it is still found in the new form of advertising, which is on the internet. I could have picked any one of dozens of these kinds of internet sites, none of which is necessarily protected. There are ways around them. This is an example from Canada of point-of-sale advertising. You will notice that when Canada had a loophole in its point-of-sale advertising legislation, banning all other forms of advertising, what the industry simply did was to create these power walls inside shops and supermarkets that were wall-to-ceiling stacks of products. Are they merely storing their products, or does this amount to an advertisement? I would say this amounts to a very powerful form of advertising. How many of us send children into the local shop or the corner cafe to buy bread or milk? I don't think that there's anyone in the room who does. So if this form of advertising exists, do you honestly think the children don't see it? And that psychologically, they do not pick up the message that tobacco is easy to obtain, very easy to obtain, and that it's perfectly normal? Why, you find it in the shops right next to the sweets and the ice cream. This I put in because I know it's the last presentation of the afternoon, more by way of a light-hearted but deadly serious example. This is what I call point-of-sale advertising in the extreme. This is photographed in the Philippines. The red and white logo and shape is the shape of the Marlboro cigarette packet, the same one that has the cowboy on. Will you look at this? In the Philippines, the Filipino government tends to control advertising, but they allowed point-of-sale advertising. So the industry interpreted point-of-sale advertising to mean the whole shop, the area and everything around it. The entire shop is painted in the colors of the Marlboro logo. There is a Marlboro advert. There is another one with some cowboys on at the top. And if you think that this is a figment of my imagination, just in case you think it's a figment of my imagination, when polled, people passing the shop were asked what the shop reminded them of, and they were told a box of Marlboro cigarettes. The advertising industry is one of the most sophisticated industries on earth. It works on psychological indicators. There are your psychological indicators. That is a point of sale. There is no other advertising around that at all, despite the fact that it also sells candy, sweeties, washing powder, ice creams, magazines, books, etc. There it is, in three dimensions. British American Tobacco's own words from their own documents available on the internet on point-of-sale advertising read as follows. So, in a market where no promotion of cigarettes is allowed, you could expect to see the following. More efficient use of the trade and in-store communications, that is, permanent merchandising material and point-of-sale temporary material. The example given here is stickers, but change maps are what we find mostly in South Africa. The aim is to create a better impact, to let the retail environment communicate the values of the product more effectively. Now, my question to you, ladies and gentlemen, is this. What exactly are the values of the product? The values of the product are disease and death. The effectiveness of point-of-sale advertising is best illustrated in the second of the bullet points here. Nine out of ten, 10 to 12-year-olds in Western Australia correctly identified the brand names of cigarettes when asked, years after a ban on advertising had been enforced. And the reason was, there was a loophole in the point-of-sale advertising. The children knew. These are not adults. These are 10 to 12-year-olds. And 9 out of 10 is not an insignificant statistic. Brand stretching is a growing form of advertising by the industry in markets where direct advertising is prohibited. And once again, I do not wish you to believe me when I tell you that this is fundamentally wrong, immoral, and unethical. Just look at what the British American Tobacco documents have to say. Opportunities should be explored by all companies so as to find non-tobacco products and other services which can be used to communicate the brand or house name, together with their visual identities, in Marlboro's case, the red and white, to ensure that cigarette lines can be effectively publicized when all direct forms of communication are denied. This is the industry exhorting to all of the people who sell their products, which are deadly, that they should exploit all direct, that they should ensure that they publicize the brand even when all direct forms of communication are denied. I don't think it gets much clearer than that. These are just examples from around the world of how brand stretching becomes effective. This is for Marlboro clothing, and that is in Malaysia. This one is also for Marlboro clothing, that is in the Czech Republic. And here is perhaps one of the most sickening examples. I'm not saying that the tobacco industry was responsible for this particular piece of merchandising, but I'm saying that we cannot be vigilant enough. Here is a child, a very small child, playing with a car. What do we see on the back of it? It's a Marlboro logo. And it doesn't matter at the end of the day whether that toy manufacturer sought the permission of the company to use one of its trademarks. That's immaterial. The point is that the officials in the Ukraine could not confiscate the toy simply on the basis that it had a Marlboro logo on it. Whereas if that were to come into South Africa, if this legislation is successful, we can protect tiny children as they grow from making the association that it is perfectly okay to use tobacco products. Packaging. Packaging is another very important form of advertising to the tobacco industry now that in many countries around the world we are moving towards bans on advertising, promotion, and sponsorship. This is from a Philip Morris document from the Bain Collection. We need to focus on areas of opportunity which do not rely on conventional media, such as new types and forms of packaging that can act as a means of communication. The package becomes the advertisement, and I will show you an example of that shortly. This is an example from South Africa, 2007. This is not old information. Suddenly we find a picture of a racing car on a packet of cigarettes. Not just the brand name, but an activity that attracts particularly men and young boys, Formula One racing. That becomes an advertisement when used in this way. Yes. This is an example from outside of South Africa. This is the current campaign in the United States on Camel number 9, which targets women. The only other products in the international market that are popularly known by numbers are the Chanel perfume. Mm-hmm. You have Chanel number 5, I see nodding head. Mm-hmm. You see this, number 9, and you immediately think Chanel number 9 and perfume. This is a very, very clever industry. Mm-hmm. It is now using in the United States this kind of paraphernalia here. I'm not the best photographer on earth, but this was a display that I personally took a photograph of last year when this product was released in the U.S. All of these products, little makeup bags, handbags, who do you think they're appealing to? They're appealing to girls and young women. This is not happening in South Africa at the moment. If we don't pass this legislation scrupulously, it will only be a matter of time before we will find brands that look like that, which are associated with other things. Product placement movies is another very valuable form of advertising to the tobacco industry. If you look at this particular study, as the prevalence of using tobacco products in movies goes up, so does the number of people who ever smoke or who are currently smoking. It's a direct correlation. And I'm not sucking this out of my thumb, and this is not an old study. It is a study in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine from 2007. And this is studying the film industry, the television industry as a whole. Advertising works. The tobacco industry knows that. This is another very interesting statistic. Again, from this study is from 2000, but it is the only one. There's one currently being done to update this. But this looks at students who are smokers versus the number of cigarette promotional items over a period of time. The more items, promotional items, caps, bits and pieces that lie around with company logos on, the more people smoke. And the difference is dramatic. The science is out there. Advertising works. The more young people see tobacco brand names, the more young people see tobacco products flying around, the more inclined they are to smoke more and more. Now we come to possibly one of the most pervasive forms of tobacco company advertising that is alive today. It is named corporate social responsibility. And this again is a 2002 study. And this is a quotation from the tobacco industry. The potential positive outcome of adopting programs of this nature, socially responsible programs, may be a more sophisticated understanding by government regulators of the needs or behavior of the industry. For example, a program to discourage teens from smoking, which is portrayed as an adult decision, might prevent or delay further regulation of the industry. Taking a quotation like that out of context has many dangers. But what this clearly indicates is that these corporate social responsibility programs run by the industry are aimed, amongst other things, at getting government regulators to delay regulation of tobacco products. I did not make this up. These are the industry's own words. This is an example of a calendar from Mauritius that I picked up at the World Health Assembly. That this is the British American Tobacco Corporation advertising its good deeds by presenting a calendar that says, we provide money for all these things. What this doesn't show, of course, is where that profit came from. How come the tobacco industry is able to give away so much money for good works? Where did that money come from, ladies and gentlemen? Does it come from the industry? No, it doesn't. It comes from the pockets of the people who smoke. And I know for a fact that here in South Africa, there are many households where up to 10% of the little bit of money that is available for household expenditure is spent on tobacco products. Tobacco or bread? Tobacco or milk? If the tobacco industry had less money to give away, there would be fewer people smoking, and that would be better for the overall health climate of the country.
That's the statute advertising taking place then.
Yes. It's by the industry to buy credibility. It wants to say, we are good guys. We will spend money in your country. We will give you scholarships. We will build up your libraries. In Malawi last week, in Malawi last week, Philip Morris gave an extraordinary amount of money to the Malawi government for building schools. Building schools with tobacco control money? Building schools with tobacco industry money? What message does this send to the school children? We'll build your school, use our product. They also use corporate social responsibility to deflect people's attention away from the deadly nature of the products that they make and sell. Now, on British American Tobacco's website here in South Africa, we have tracked down the following documents. It is a program called CORA, and these are from roughly 2000. These are the stated objectives of the CORA program, which is a corporate... I'll get it for you. Sorry, I neglected to write it out in full. They wish to isolate the anti-smoking movement and win over public opinion. That is stated on the website, and I will give you documents where you can, honorable members, can go and look it up. This is again, this is not in quotation marks, but it is taken directly from the British American Tobacco website. They have a research model for understanding stakeholders. Who are their stakeholders? I'll let you decide. They wish to identify stakeholders and understand the level and the nature of their influence. They classify the stakeholders according to three criteria: the impact they have on their business, their hostility or sympathy towards tobacco, and their willingness to change their views. Sorry? It's called espionage, our DG enforced. I could have used some other examples, other expressions too. Their willingness to change their views. People who have power and influence. This is a further quotation from that website. Decision makers. These the industry defines as individuals and institutions whose decisions will have a direct and immediate impact on our ability to achieve profitable growth over the next 5 years. In Kenya, not very long ago, the tobacco industry took an entire parliamentary portfolio health committee to a beach, to a hotel complex, where they entertained them for several days. And the tobacco control bill died just there. That is called profitable growth over the next 5 years and the ability to influence decision making. Then there's a second class of people, according to that research model, the influencers. These are individuals and institutions who have no immediate impact on our ability to achieve profitable growth, but who, nonetheless, exert influence over the views and activities of decision makers or other influencers. I put these slides up to indicate to you, ladies and gentlemen, that the sale of tobacco products and the marketing of tobacco products by the tobacco industry is as clever, as cold and calculating as it is deliberate. The ultimate aim of corporate social responsibility. These are the corporate social responsibility. We'll give money away to nothing. Is to get stakeholders to support that achievement and standards of business integrity. That is the aim of corporate social responsibility. And that is why the Department of Health has said, by all means, allowed to give money away, but only anonymously, so that it cannot be used in the ways that I have illustrated to you now. This is a good, strong piece of legislation, and it is absolutely essential for the well-being of South Africa's citizens. The World Health Organization, again, honorable members, these are not my words. I don't have the eloquence to get even near to these kinds of statements that the industry puts out and that the honorable World Health Organization puts out. Socially responsible initiatives, so-called by transnational tobacco companies, sit side by side with their continued involvement in aggressive advertising campaigns and their attempts to actively undermine tobacco control activities of the World Health Organization. And we have put the industry touts its youth smoking prevention initiative, and nowhere more than in South Africa. Those who see the stop the hand sign on tobacco retailers. Here is one from Russia. Again, a photograph that I took myself. This is a shopkeeper saying, it's a law. We do not sell tobacco to persons under the 18. I'm not going to ask how many people in this room have teenage children. Simply say to those of you who have teenage children, isn't it a fact that teenage children want to be adults faster and faster? If it is the law not to sell tobacco products to children, we only make them want it more. Because this kind of sentence is in a vacuum. The law is preventing kids under the age of 18 from doing a whole lot of things. Driving, drinking. Driving is a good thing. Drinking might be a good thing if you do it in moderation. Isn't tobacco also a good thing? That is the inescapable conclusion. Youth prevention program, and this is solid science. This is not Fruit Loop material. This is solid science. The youth prevention programs, when run by the industry, are undertaken for public relations purposes. There is the Landman study there. They enhance the appeal of smoking to teenagers by framing smoking as an adult activity. They may detract governments from pursuing effective regulatory measures. I've always asked myself, I as a lawyer have to be very careful of internal contradictions. I cannot operate in contradiction, because otherwise I cannot defend the case as I am supposed to defend. I cannot take money with one hand and then defend another client with another. I can only take the money from the clients I'm actually defending. Now, if the tobacco industry is so keen on stopping youth from smoking, what is the difference between a 17-year-old pair of lungs or an 18-year-old pair of lungs or a 19-year-old pair of lungs? What is the difference psychologically and in human maturity between a 17-year-old, an 18-year-old, a 19-year-old? Is a 19-year-old actually in a position, just because the law says you're 18 in one day, to make a better decision than he or she was 2 days before? I don't think so. This is an old document, but I put it here because it is a perfect, it comes from 87. It is the industry at the very time that this document was being written was saying to the public that nicotine wasn't addictive and that it didn't target smokers. Project LS, there's a secret industry document from R.J. Reynolds, is a wider circumference, non-menthol cigarette targeted at younger adult male smokers, primarily 13 to 24 years of age. 13 to 24 years of age. The point that you have to remember when dealing with the tobacco industry is simply the first point that I made today. The industry's profit margin depends on the number of people that can address. The younger we are, the less smart we about our own health choices. When we were younger, we thought we'd live forever. I want to show you an example of a tobacco package being used for advertising. This is a photograph I took in India last year of a new brand there called iGen. I'd like to draw your attention to this. Sin, repent, repeat. What kind of message is that sending to the youth of India? Sin, repent, repeat. Here, coming out of the box, is the tale of the devil. What message is this sending to the young people of India? But more importantly, what is this cigarette called? It's called iGen. What do you associate with the small letter I? iPod. Not so? Now look here. This is the smallest packet of iGen cigarettes available. That's my iPod. It is exactly the same size and shape. And what is to stop a brand from that being introduced in South Africa? And isn't every young person who sees that lying around going to associate it with an iPod or any of the other iProducts that are Apple's marketing brand? There's nothing. I went into a shop. I have never, if you go into the offices all around the world with tobacco control activists, you'll see them full of posters and packages of cigarettes bought all over the world to illustrate and inform what the industry does and how it markets its products. I've never, ever bought a tobacco product because I swore that I would never make the industry 1 cent richer out of my particular pocket. This is the first packet of cigarettes I ever bought, and I bought it out of sheer outrage. I was told about it, so I went into a shop, and I asked an Indian shopkeeper if I could have a box of iGen. And he brought out a box of approximately 20 or 30 iGen, and it looked like an ordinary box with this logo on it. And I said to the shopkeeper, no, I want a smaller one. He then produced this, the box I bought, which has 5 cigarettes in it. That makes it affordable for young people. 5 cigarettes in it. He handed it over to me. And as I was paying, he said, "Wow, man," he said, "I'm impressed. I didn't know you were part of the younger generation." So where are those cigarettes, probably? Not a 54-year-old me, I can assure you. And even he could see that. The Framework Convention on Tobacco Control expressly prohibits industry interference in public health policy. It expressly forbids industry interference in public health policy. We are gathered here specifically and deliberately to implement public health policy. We are not here to help the industry. And the industry should not be allowed to influence this proceeding in any way. This is our international legal obligation in terms of the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. This is a list of companies that currently have an almost complete ban. South Africa is still listed there, but all of the other countries on that list are now exceeding what South Africa is able to do. And the principal weaknesses in our law are point of sale and internet and corporate social responsibility. The industry will frequently tell us that they still need to be able to communicate through trade publications. But we cannot regulate trade publications. Technically, there is truth in that. But I saw, unfortunately, only this morning, so I used an Australian example. This is a retail publication from Australia. Doesn't that look just like a tobacco advert?
know how to sell a product that he or she has been selling for years and years and years. And do we need more tobacco products? I would say no. But this morning, I was shown a copy of a South African trade publication. Unfortunately, I did not have time to photograph that, or I would have shown it to you on the slide today. It is the kind of advertising that made me gag. It shows a woman naked, except for a pair of lace, knickers, underpants, whatever you want to call them, advertising a brand of cigarettes in a retail paper. We have no control over these trade publications. The only way that we can is to ensure that they do not communicate to pictures like this one. Here is an example from Saskatchewan, Canada. This is all tobacco products here. In Saskatchewan, they passed a law that product displays were outlawed. There is the shop. Still going strong, still doing business. The only thing is that the tobacco product cannot be displayed in this form, which in my view constitutes an advertisement. And here is probably one of the most remarkable pictures. This one comes from Reykjavik in Iceland. Product displays were banned. Where are the cigarettes now? They're under the counter. People who smoke will go and ask for their cigarettes. They don't need to. They can be put under the counter with a simple sign that says, you may buy tobacco products here. The industry will tell you that this affects their ability to compete with one another. We're not here sitting on a bill about protecting the tobacco industry. We are here sitting on a bill to protect the health of South Africa's. This I've put in because I am practically finished. I wanted to show you this because I thought I'd show you how the interesting advertising, the Marlboro Man, that was the advertisement from Philip Morris and their product, was used very successfully by the World Health Organization in a series of posters for World Health Day, which used the cowboy image that said, Bob, I've got cancer. And the next year, Bob was dead. I think it makes the point very effectively. And then this one, just for the sheer fun of it. The Transportation's Aid Association then published this advertisement building on that theme that the cowboy has now killed his horse with secondhand smoke. You will hear tomorrow, and as you you will hear tomorrow and over the course of this proceeding that South Africa has enough tobacco control legislation. You will hear that this process is being moved too quickly, that it is being forced down your throat, that you have lots of other issues to deal with. You will hear that the industry was not properly consulted. You will hear that tobacco control can wait until we have dealt with other important health issues. And you will hear that the stuff that the anti-tobacco lobby has is old stuff. We're a different industry. We have changed. Have we? A website, can we wait, I ask myself. A website that I researched in February 2008, not so long ago. It's a British American tobacco website. And it revealed that at the present time, British American Tobacco is specifically researching and targeting the black community, which is referred to as black diamond, in a cynical bid to increase its sale of tobacco products. And there's more. Black diamonds, this is from the industry website, black diamonds are considered to be the drivers of the South African economy. Black middle class, the industry points out, has grown by 30% in 1 year to 2.6 million. The spending power of black diamonds, not black people, black diamonds, the spending power of black black diamond, has risen from 130 billion to 180 billion. 2% of South Africa's black population accounts for 54% of all black buying power, versus 10% accounting for 43% 15 months ago. Now, this last statistic is a very serious statistic for the South African economy, one that really does give us pause to think. My question to you is just this: what is the industry's interest in black diamonds? Buying power, because this industry, like all other industries, works to a bottom line. And the bottom line is really simple. The industry owes a fiduciary duty to its shareholders to make as much money as it can. This is not rocket science. It's really simple. They are out there to make a profit. We are in here to protect public health. The time to act is now. The bill to support is this bill. We have irrefutable evidence that the tobacco industry sees South Africans who are upwardly mobile as black diamonds. If we do not act decisively, won't we simply be increasing black death? Thank you for your attention. I will have copies of this presentation shared tomorrow. In the meantime, I have copies of a publication that was released. I'm a little jet lagged. The last day of April, so this is 3-4 days ago. It's definitely not old. It was released by ASH, Action on Smoking or Health in the UK. It is called Black African Footprint. I have 3 copies here. I made 3 because I didn't want to overburden my luggage, but I will hand these up to the portfolio committee and I will make sure that you have more copies. This is the most extraordinary newspaper of how British American tobacco, which over Africa as a whole, has roughly 90% of the share, give or take a few million cigarettes. It's a huge footprint, and this is an example of how that footprint is used.
Thank you very much, Advocate Patricia Lambert, for your very good eloquent, succinct presentation. When you were taking this submission, it was as if you didn't come here galloping. You gave yourself time. But honorable members, I'm not sure you will guide me here. I know there are a lot of questions for the touches on a number of issues. Some of them arose in terms of some of the presentations we had earlier on. And indeed, Philip Morris raised a number of issues that are now being countered by this submission. And of course, I was saying some of those issues Philip Morris was raising were going to be important for us in terms of looking forward around the question of the advertising, editorial warnings, the packages for export and import, etc., etc. That was being raised. And I'm worried about time. So I'm not sure whether maybe you allow me, I'm not sure you'll be around tomorrow morning to field the questions. Instead of taking any question now in 17 hours, comma, not 3. And, I wanted maybe to suspend the discussion now, because I know Honorable Cabildo was supposed to leave past 4, am I right? I have to delay his departure. But I need to catch it, but it's quite illuminating presentation, I must say. Thank you very much once again. Honorable Matime.
Thank you very much for giving me some time, Chair, maybe to come out with a suggestion. as to what we can do about this presentation. I suggested that, for instance, the presentation has been long, informative, and however, it has some its own sort of facts which one has to dig deeper into those. And first of all, the presentation again had an undermining part on us as members of parliament. Therefore, I suggest that we close the matter now, then we resume tomorrow in the morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG and the team. Thank you very much, members of the public.